I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Innovation and Leadership. I'm Jess Larson. Today on the show, I've got Trip Crosby.
Think about what Dollar Shave Club was. Think about what Squatty Potty was. Sure, it was clever, well-priced, all of that. But they were just talking about what it was. Because what it was, what those products were and are incredibly interesting and funny on their own. It's like the same is true with Poopery. So Poopery, Squatty Potty, Dollar Shave Club, those are the ones people remember. And
Trip, thanks for making time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So we'll let you introduce yourself. Tell us about the various things you're doing, and I'm interested actually to hear how you introduce yourself.
Man, I am also interested in hearing how I introduce myself, because I find even after 15 years in my career, explaining what it is the most challenging part. The short version is I make YouTube videos, oftentimes in partnerships with brands. I host and perform and sometimes even do keynotes at corporate events. And I always have two or three ancillary creative projects going on. Currently, I'm trying to finish writing my first feature-length screenplay. And I'm also writing and producing a 60 to 90 minute live performance. It's really hard to explain because it's something very unique that I've never seen done and certainly haven't done myself.
Sure. So there's a lot of people that make YouTube videos. There's not a lot of people that have 10 million and 15 million views on their videos. What do you attribute some of the success that you guys have had to? What do you think has resonated so much more than other folks who are trying to make comedy online?
Well, for one, reps. We started doing YouTube videos early on when YouTube first began in 2006. And it took a while to really figure out what our voice was in the world of YouTube sketch comedy. So I would attribute some of our success to just doing a lot of it. I would also attribute some of it to being at the right place at the right time. Like I said, we started really early on, and we had one of the first viral comedy sketches on YouTube, which at the time was a bigger deal than it is now because there wasn't as much content flying around everywhere. So having a sketch that was suddenly on the homepage of YouTube and then millions of blogs got us on the news, and it was shown on late night shows. And so we were able to get the ball rolling really easily just by starting early, having the right sketch at the right time, and also having a lot of practice.
Yeah, it's interesting, those meaningful repetitions, right? There's so many people that want the result but don't want to pay the price.
Oh, yeah. And you have to pay the price more than ever now because YouTube is so spread thin with content, and it is really hard to break through. There are just thousands of people that have millions of views. So it's harder than ever, and you have to be patient, and you have to be willing to just keep grinding out content and know that you may never have a hit. It's almost like being a musician.
Sure. So for people who don't understand or maybe aren't familiar with how folks like you would partner with a brand, I mean, you've got over 200,000 subscribers, 75 million views. Can you help people understand a little bit about why they would want to engage with someone like you and what that typically looks like?
Sure. So that's even changed over time. The reason people partner with us now is because we have a very long slate of successful viral videos And all of it is brand friendly. A lot of it is office culture humor. So we work with a lot of B2B brands that are looking to market their product, usually their technology product, to other businesses. And so we've written a lot of comedy around that specific culture. So it's very targeted. It's very brand friendly, and it's very well produced for the budgets that we work with. So I've directed a number of commercials for broadcast, and it's very expensive to get that sort of advertising. You're paying a lot of money for the production. You're paying a ton of money to an ad agency for the idea. And there's just a lot of bells and whistles. Whereas if you work with us and you're a brand and you want to get a lot of eyeballs, you want the content to be good, you're just coming straight to us, and we're able to produce it cheaper. There's no ad agency in the way. Actually, there is sometimes, but oftentimes there's not. We work directly with a lot of brands. And the content's going to be really engaging and funny, and it's going to look good, near broadcast quality.
Yeah. You know, I do think it's an interesting strategy, that office humor. I think, you know, having seen your guys' videos over the years, you know, conference call in real life, email in real life, you know, stuff like that, every hotel ever, you know, winning at the rental car. Like,
right.
I really identify with it, having been a business traveler a lot and just that world. I can see how it becomes a little more magnetic for those B2B brands that are worried about how does this play with our brand? Is this going to detract, or what are the other videos they've made? Is that going to embarrass us? You know,
totally. It's a safer route for those companies that want to do content that is not just safe, but relevant. And so, whereas 10 years ago, we used to have to, I don't say we had to, what we would sell is really just our platform. And we'd say, hey, sponsor video on our channel. And at the time, the algorithm on YouTube was very different, and just putting anything out meant that all of our subscribers would see it. So we could basically just sell the numbers. And also, of course, they knew the kind of content they were getting. They would be less interested in the content 5 years ago. It was more just make something funny, put our name on the end. Now the algorithm is different. It's more pay to play. Facebook came along. They have their own video distribution now. So now we sell more our ideas and our ability to execute those ideas.
It's interesting. Adapt quick or die, right?
I feel like we reinvent our business every 6 months. I'm not kidding.
Well, one of the reasons I was excited to have you on the show is, you know, there's so many folks who are involved in content marketing or whatever they're calling it, you know, these days.
Yeah. What's the phrase of the month?
Yeah. Pick your term, right? And one thing that, you know, a lot of organizations, they can get by, you know, hiring some 22-year-old intern to put a fluff Facebook post up so they can say, look, we posted this many times, right?
Right.
But when it comes to something like comedy, you really can't fake it. You know, like it's something that everyone has such a strong opinion on, was that funny or not? And, you know, like any craft, it doesn't come easy. Can you talk about, in your mind, that evolution of what it takes to actually know what's going to resonate? You know,
yes.
We talked about doing it a lot, but what else?
Yes. Well, first of all, I should say we're still always crossing our fingers when we release something. There is no guarantee. There's no secret to being 100% sure that a joke is going to land. I mean, when Jerry Seinfeld goes out and does a 45-minute set, it's all material that he's practiced and rehearsed and edited. And that's true for any comedian. What's unique about what we do is that oftentimes we are putting untested material out in the wild, and we are depending on our experience. And, you know, it's a little bit of, all I'm trying to say is it is a little bit of a gamble every time. But I would say that aside from just having the experience and the reps, some of it is having a good process for understanding the audience that we're speaking to. Some of it is understanding how pacing works on YouTube and Facebook. Some of it is understanding, I don't know, I'm not going to pretend like there's some formula. I really just think over time, our instincts have just gotten better. And we just kind of know what will work and what won't. I hate to answer
sure.
so broadly, but
no, but
that's
but
really
you think
what
about
it is.
Folks who are, you know, we have all sorts of different people on the show who are masters at different things. We have race car drivers and pro athletes, and we have, you know, authors who've written multiple New York Times best-selling books, and, you know,
right.
people who they just sit there and beat on their craft until they kind of unlock the patterns. And
that's a good way to put it. You unlock the patterns.
Well,
and we should be compared to professional athletes or NASCAR drivers or anything like that, but it definitely is a subconscious training that's going on with every video that we make.
Yeah. What about this? For folks who are interested in becoming funnier, people who they would like to maybe start mm-hmm. dabbling with comedy, but they're so scared of falling on their face, they haven't started. What advice would you have for people about getting started and you know, putting their foot in the water and trying things, being prepared for failure, and just what kind of advice would you have for organizations or individuals?
Well, for individuals who want to pursue comedy, it really is just putting your foot in the water and failing. It's just you have to decide. You have to understand that you are signing up to fall on your face. You're signing up to fail and try again and fail and try again. That's the nature of it. If you're an individual listening and you're like in any way interested in the craft of comedy, whether it be stand up or acting, I always suggest starting with an improv class. And in fact, I teach improv to a lot of corporations because I think the principles that you learn there are helpful as much off the stage and out of the spotlight as they are in it. In the study of improv, you're going to learn a lot about being more present. You're going to learn a lot more about how to actively listen to someone. You're going to learn a lot about being authentic, expressing yourself more clearly, making bold choices, being willing to take risks, learning how to operate inside of failure. All those things are what you learn when you study improv. So that's a great starting point. But for an organization, it's like, hey, we want to do more than just put out some straightforward, stupid Facebook ad that's targeted to our exact local market. We want to put something out a little sexier, a little funnier, and be more like what we see on broadcast television. I would just say partner with someone that has a good portfolio. Because if you just go try that, it may or likely won't work. Now, there's exceptions. There's the Dollar Shave Club guys that in-house produced one of the most memorable ads of this decade. I'm sure you're familiar with the Dollar Shave Club guy. And I mean, like, that was just an in-house thing. And that guy was just a genius. And I'm sure he has marketing training or comedy training somewhere back there. But that's just not very possible for the average company to go do. And we get a lot of calls. And you would be surprised at the number of requests we get to make something, quote unquote, like the Dollar Shave Club commercial. Like it's just something you can do. Because people want that. It's very sexy to be funny for brands. It's a way to be memorable, and it seems cheap. Yeah, it seems like a more inexpensive way to be memorable, but it's not necessarily that easy. So I would say if you're a corporation, you want to do that, you know, talk to your agency or find someone who is an expert and find out what's really involved. Yeah. There is an ROI. There is a very an amazing ROI if you do it right.
Sure. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and then I have a question about that for you.
Okay.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Okay, so Tripp, right before the sponsor break, I told you I had a question, and I guess it kind of relates to something you said. You know, there's so many folks that they realize comedy and entertainment is, you know, can be a big advantage, can be a huge leverage point if it's done right. And, you know, I think about some of the folks we've had on the show in the past. We have you know, we had the guys from the Harmon Brothers who did like Squatty Potty and, you know, Fiber Fix and some of those that have really worked out commercially. Had another guy, Jay Davis, who's been a part of some videos that have done tens of millions of views. And I think of one of the things that Jay said, he said, you know, when you brought up the, you know, can we have a video like Dollar Shave Club, of how many people don't realize the value of novelty of, like, you could produce right. that same video, but because it's already been done,
right.
like how much of the leverage is gone because of the loss of novelty?
Right.
It sounds like you agree with me there. And Jay, what would you add to that?
I'd say, first of all, make sure you have a product that's that novel. You know, Like you can't turn just a new interesting way to save files inside of a cloud into a razor that shows up at your doorstop for cheap. Like that's the novelty started in a genius product, right? So I would say back up and make sure what you're selling is interesting. And then I don't know what I would say after that. That's all I would add, because I have a feeling Jay said it better than I could.
Well,
from there, novelty is go ahead.
No, I was going to say it is so easily overlooked, right? When it feels like, oh, we can just put that new wallpaper on it and all of a sudden everybody will want it, rather than thinking harder and fundamentally questioning, like, is this product inherently notable, right?
Right. I mean, think about what Dollar Shave Club was. Think about what Squatty Potty was. Sure, it was clever, well-priced, all of that. But they were just talking about what it was. Because what it was, what those products were and are incredibly interesting and funny on their own. It's like the same is true with Poopery. So Poopery, Squatty Potty, Dollar Shave Club, those are the ones people remember. And we get a lot of calls where people are like, hey, they're thinking those seemed inexpensive. Like, you're funny. Make us one of those. And I, in the back of my head, I'm often thinking, well, hey, that's not possible because your product is really boring and kind of embarrassing. So like, that's never going to happen. Second of all, like, I'm not a magician. I can't just guarantee you some novel idea. We got a lot of work to do on the front end to land there. You know, we got to put a lot against the wall. We got to change course a lot. The creative process is really messy. At least it is for me. I don't know. Some of these other guys might be a lot smarter and they might hit a lot more home runs than me, but it's really messy and unpredictable from where I sit.
No, listen, we had the Harmon brothers who made Squatty Potty, Poopery, FiberFix, you know, chat books, right? We had them on the show, but we also had one of their clients, the guys from Spark, who own FiberFix and paid them to make it, right? Mm. And they're talking about, like, if you want that much writing and you want that much production, like, you're paying like $100,000 a minute to make that
easily.
Kind of a thing, right? And so this idea of it will be cheap, like, it's in my observation, I'd be interested in your thought. It seems like it may end up cheaper than other routes because the ROI, if you do it right, could be so big. But cheap is a pretty relative term, right?
It's completely relative to the return. Yeah, right.
No kidding. Well, listen.
So cutting corners is, go ahead. I just cut you off. Speaking of
cutting. No, you're the guest. I'm talking too much. You go.
I was just saying cutting corners might save you money in the front end. And we've done that. And we've made stuff that we didn't think was funny, but we're not the ones writing the check. So we've just done it. And I have a feeling whatever money was spent was wasted for some of these people that weren't really willing to take creative risks or put up the money for something quality.
Yeah, you know, having just a little bit of a peek behind the curtain with some of these folks that I've spent time with, in addition to having them on the show, like, realizing how much time and effort they put into writing, you know, mm-hmm. I think it's very easily discounted by folks who don't see that process and recognize, like, how hard and how many revisions they do to come up with that stuff that resonates. It's not a, hey, a coffee, write it on the back of the napkin. Okay, now we're done. It's like, no, that's like step one in the 1,000-step journey, right?
Yeah, it's present us three ideas and we'll choose the best ones. Okay, it's not that simple. For me, it's less about a lot of work and it's more about less work. So let me expound on that. For me to have good ideas, I have to be less busy. So like I could fill all my time really easily coming up with ideas for brands and writing little scripts or for even for internal communication stuff for some companies that we work with. None of it would be very good because my wheels are just spinning all the time. I would have no space in my brain to actually stumble upon a really good idea. So I found that I have to kind of slow down and create as much space in my life as I can for the good ideas to show up in my brain, however they do or whatever they do.
You know, I really want to talk about this. I know we're about out of time for the first half of the interview. Let's bring this up on the second part.
Okay, great.
Let's do this. Why don't you tell people where the best places to connect with you are online?
So I'm becoming an Instagrammer. I'm finding that's my new platform of choice. So please follow me on Instagram, Trip Crosby. You'll see a lot of posts about my kid who's funnier than me, but also I do some really fun things in my stories. Every week I give someone $100 or at least a chance to get $100 through a really fun game that we play. I do little short films in my stories. whatever. You know what Instagram is. I Instagram. That's where I am.
Yeah. And for everybody, that Trip is with two P's. Trip Crosby. And, you know, of course, you know, YouTube, Trip and Tyler, tripcrosby.com as well. Okay, everybody, tune back in. We're going to ask Trip more of how you become funnier. Thanks. Well, that's it for the episode. One other thing I wanted to tell you about. If you'll remember the guys from Convoy in episodes back, Ken Free and Trent Mano, I went on one of their CEO trips to New York and I met a guy named Brent Thompson, very successful entrepreneur. He was former CEO of Jive Communications, big company now, I think $300 or $400 million. Anyways, he started a new company called blipbillboards.com. I'm super stoked they're a sponsor now. But I remember a year and some ago when I met him, I thought it was genius. Instead of having to buy 6 months or a year's worth of billboard for thousands of dollars, you can buy 8 seconds at a time for like 10 or 20 cents. You pick what billboard you want it on, what time of day you want it to run. And it just puts so much power in the hands of marketers and CEOs who want to try something and see if it works. You can buy as many or as few as you want, change it as many times as you want. I think now our podcast is being advertised on billboards in like 18 different states because we have these guys as sponsors. We're pretty excited about it. Hope you check out blipbillboards.com. Thanks.